don't know what to say.
Just a week after her husband was shot and killed while having a drink after work at a local bar, his wife, Sunaina Damala, stunned the world with a press conference where she spoke candidly about what was on her mind.
We've read many times in newspapers of some kind of shooting happening everywhere. And we always wondered how safe, or I especially, I was always concerned, are we doing the right thing of staying in the United States of America?
She'd come here with her husband from India, and she didn't just have questions, she demanded answers.
And I need an answer. I need an answer from the government. I need an answer for everyone out there. That what is that they're going to do to stop this hate crime?
I'm Gina Kaufman, and a year later, Sunaina Damala has gotten answers from the people in her own community anyway, and she is still here. Today, we're going to hear her story on KCUR's Central Standard. Sunaina Damala, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
Good morning, Gina, and thank you for having me here.
I know this is a big question because it's been a crazy year, but tell me about the last year, like the answers you've gotten from people, the people you've met, about whether you belong here.
Last year has been a very tough and interesting year. In the beginning of 2017, that wasn't what me and Srinu envisioned for ourselves. It was more a year that we looked forward to have our own family or have a kid. But unfortunately, all of that kind of turned upside down on February 22nd when he was killed by a man because of his ignorance, I should say. After that, I went to India for his funeral, and me coming back was a big question. But then the way the community came forward, the way so many people came forward, including FBI, including government, including my employer, Intel Solutions, including Congressman Yoder, Mindy Corporan, like so many people that I met all over this year, they all kind of gave me that comforting feeling. They gave me the warmth of love, that you do belong here, and this is equally your home too. So I'm here right now still. I just came back from India after performing the 1 year anniversary.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about that, actually. I mean, the 1 year anniversary of your husband's death, that is, I understand that you were commemorating this through a Hindu tradition that is typically carried out at that milestone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in the Hindu tradition, we kind of mourn for 1 year. And Srinu comes from the Brahmin family. So they, if you look at the Hindu caste system, they are the highest. And then they are usually the priest in the temple. So they kind of follow the customs and traditions even more than any other religions in India. What our belief is that his soul has now reached heaven, and so we are praying for his peace. So what we do is that we invite priests and everybody to the house. They do prayers, they chant. So they pray for his soul, and we give donations to the priest. For example, we give cow, because cow is treated very holy in Indian families. So cow, and then we give rice, we give pulses and everything that is required for a family to survive. So by doing that, our belief is that we are giving everything that is required for Srinu to give him energy in heaven.
What was it like for you personally to be back in India participating in this ritual?
It was an emotionally tough journey. I was getting back all those memories of last year, of how we had to carry him in a coffin, and all that we had to face through a year ago. But being surrounded by family gave me a lot of support. My family is my biggest support.
Well, you said that everything we have gone through, and it in some ways there are people who have gone through this with you, but in other ways there are certain things I imagine that you've had to really deal with alone.
Yes, I mean, last year, like I said, it's been a tough journey, not just because I lost the most important person in my life, but also because of my immigration struggle. My status to stay in the United States was tied up with my husband, since he was a principal holder of the work visa. And that night, I not only lost him, but also my status to stay in the country. So the past year has been a struggle to get my immigration right so that I can stay here and I can do what I want to do. I can spread that message of unity and empathy so that no other family has to go through what we are going through right now.
Was it clear to you quickly that that's what you wanted to do? I want to talk about your immigration struggle in a moment, but just, you know, so early on we heard from you those questions about, is this where I belong? Is this where I should stay? And you have fought to stay.
At that moment when I asked that question, it was my pain, because for me and Srinu, this was our home. We got our home in Olathe. We had our dreams of starting a family, and we were slowly building up towards it. And suddenly all that crashed. And so that question came out of that pain, because this is what my belief was. And am I doing something wrong in thinking this way, that this is my home? But the way the community responded, and the overwhelming response that I received, saying that this is your home, made me think that, yes, this is my home. And what I should be doing is that I should work on spreading this message that we all belong here, and irrespective of our country of origin, irrespective of our skin color or religion or whatever. This is our home, and that's what made me to start the Forever Welcome campaign, where our mission is that there is no you, there is no me when it comes to living in America. It's we, and we all belong here.
Tell me more about your path to getting that visa renewal, which, yeah, we've heard that your visa expired with your husband's death. That's a double shock, and it was recently renewed with help from Republican Congressman Kevin Yoder.
Yes. So when the immediate, when I went to India, as I said, what they did was that the FBI did a parole for me to come back to the United States, so which would allow me only a one-time entry into the country. And meanwhile, the FBI also did a deferred action for me, which was extended for an year, and which would let me work, go back to my work. And in the background, my company started processing my work visa, and Garmin was also doing a U visa for me. So they were trying all these parallel options that are available that would give a stability to me in terms of immigration. So what I received in January of this year was my work visa, which is called the H-1B, which would now allow me to stay in the United States for 3 years. And
that made it possible for you to go back for this 1 year.
Yes. if I would have been on the deferred action and if I was still waiting for my work visa or the U visa, I wouldn't have been able to travel. But now with the work visa, that gave me that flexibility to travel. And going back to India for the 1 year ceremony meant a lot to me because that's Srinu's home. Doing it back home and being a part of all that as his wife was the most important thing for me. And I'm glad I was able to do that.
You know, I'm curious about your personal history. I mean, tell me some about your upbringing. You are from Hyderabad, right?
Yes.
Tell me about, you know, your childhood there, your family.
I am the third child from my parents, third and the last child. I have two elder sisters, but then between me and my oldest sister, we are 14 years apart. And between me and my middle sister, we are 12 years apart. So I was this pampered, spoiled
child. You were the baby.
Yeah, I was the baby of the house, and I was literally the baby of the house. So I was this carefree child growing up in Hyderabad. My father was a very protective father, but he always gave us the freedom. His only thing was that you study and you get good education. That's what I want from you.
In what way was he protective?
He was always like, my school should only be like 5-10 minutes walk from my house. Or the first time I got into a public transportation bus was when I joined for my undergraduation. So that was the first time where I had to go travel like at least 1 hour in the bus. So I felt it so tough. And then I would come home every evening and then I would quarrel, fight with my mom and dad. Is like, you made me so, like, you brought me up so like precious, like I can't get into the bus, there's so much of people, they push me, I can't get into that, I feel it's so tough to travel by public transportation, you should have made me rough and strong from the small itself. So but then it was an interesting journey.
Yeah, I mean, for someone who felt like, you know, that it was hard for you to take that step of getting on a bus, that you became someone who moved to another continent.
Yeah. As I said, I was always, I always had so many people around me to get things done for me. I mean, when I was in my 5th standard, my older sister got married. And when I was in my 7th standard, my other sister got married. And my brother-in-laws were also the same. And so I never had to go to a bank. I never had to do anything by myself. So when I was in my college, and in the third year of my college, I saw my friends getting coaching in GRE and TOEFL to apply for universities. And I think that's when the idea sparked into my head that maybe I should also give it a try. And actually, my older sister, she tried it in 93 to come here and pursue her master's. But there weren't enough resources available back then in India, so she couldn't make it. And I think that's also popped back in my head that maybe I could do what my older sister couldn't do.
Well, Sunaina Dumala, we're going to get right back to this conversation. It's so fascinating to hear what brought you to this country, and we're going to pick back up with that when we return. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and today's show is a portrait session. We'll be right back. I'm Gina Kaufman talking with Sunaina Dumala. Most of us came to know her under the worst possible circumstances when her husband, Srinivas Kuchibodla, a garment worker from India, was killed at a bar in Olathe by a shooter who allegedly told him to get out of his country before opening fire. We've known her through the lens of that tragedy, but now we're hearing more of her story in this portrait session on KCUR's Central Standard. Hi again, Sunaina.
Hello, Gina.
Right before we went to the break, we were talking about your decision to come to the United States and your hopes and your desire for more independence. Can you tell me more about that? That search for independence piece of it?
Sorry.
No, that's okay.
So I wanted to be come out of that protective and cocoon like an environment. And
oh, it happens. Don't worry.
Sorry, I've been a little sick.
No, it's going around.
So yeah, as I said, when I saw my friends getting coaching in GRE and TOEFL, I went to my father and I asked him, Dad, can I also get some, go with my friends and try this out? And he said, are you sure? I said, I don't know, but I at least want to give it a try. So he was like, okay. And that's how I went to coaching with my friends, and I took my GRE and I took my TOEFL. And I graduated in 2006 May.
From your undergraduate?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I waited because I did not apply for the fall semester, so I applied for the spring semester. And I was in United States in 2007 spring.
You know, going back to that to that moment when you decided to come to the United States, I mean, you met your husband at around the same time, right?
Yes. While I was applying for the universities and while I was waiting to hear back from the universities, there used to be a social media platform back then which was very popular in India. It was called Orkut, O-R-K-U-T. And it was popular than Facebook around that time. So I was just going around in Orkut and trying to reach out to friends and chat with them. And then I started chatting with my best friend's brother, who happens to be also Srinu's friend from his undergraduation. So, and then when I was chatting with him, I said, he asked me what you're up to now and what are your future plans now that you graduated and all
was
that.
He was in the United States already at that time.
Yes. So I said, yeah, I've applied for the so-and-so universities. I'm still waiting to hear back from them. And he said, so what universities did you apply for? And I gave the list. And one of those universities was also University of Texas, El Paso. And he was like, oh, I have my friends from my undergraduation and they can help you out.
Just if you were to land there? And so when you first saw pictures of him, you know, like that's part of what you see on a social media site, I'm guessing. I don't know. I'm not familiar with the one where you two met. But it, you would have seen his photo and you would have seen like a little bit about him. Do you remember your first impressions of him?
No, I did not see any photo
of really?
Him. And so my friend's brother, he actually gave me four names. And the first name was Srinivas's name. And so I did not even bother to look at the other names. I just looked at the first name and I approached him and I said, I'm so-and-so. I was given your name by so-and-so. And I applied for your university. And I just want to check if you can help me with my checking my application status.
So you didn't meet under like romantic pretenses. You were just trying to find out more about El Paso and this school and stuff like that.
Yeah, more about if we can go and check about my application at the College of Admissions Office and to see where the status is. And all. It was more casual, formal kind of thing. He responded back to me, I think, after 2 days or so, and he said, sure, I would be. And he was he's like, so who gave you my contact and how do you know him and all of that? And that's how our conversation started. And slowly we went from chatting for like few minutes to a few hours and all night long. And we used to discuss on so many things. He used to share about his life so far in U.S. as a student, as a teaching assistant, as a research assistant, his research work, and what it takes to live in America and being independent and being responsible. And in all of this, I think we both got connected.
Yeah, do you remember the first time he said something that really impressed you with him just as a person? As a person who you might like to know better?
I think he was more, I think we both were equally caring towards each other. And he would check on me, what did you eat, what did your mom make, and how much he misses her. The food made by his mother, and all of that. And I think his words of encouragement and motivation were the ones that caught my attention. He would say that if you believe in hard work, there is nothing that you cannot achieve. And that is a principle that he followed all through the while. And that is something he tried to inculcate in me every time I was falling short.
You know, it seems like chatting with this guy who was already in the United States when you were just thinking about coming here must have influenced your own ideas about what this journey was going to be like, what to expect.
Yes, very true. Knowing him gave me that confidence that if I would have gotten my visa, I mean, like at that point of time, I still did not get an admission. I still did not get a visa. So my thought process was like, if I get through the admission, if I get through the visa, if I land up in United States, this would be my person who could be my protective layer. Now that I am going to live behind the protective layer of my family back home. And as I would be the only person from my entire extended family traveling all by herself to US to pursue her education. So that itself is a very brave step.
Yeah, but that there was this one person you felt connected to on the other side meant yeah. something to you.
Yes. So It definitely gave a very relaxing feeling to some extent that there would be this one person that I can reach out to if I land in some trouble or some problem, or he would be my 911.
You know, I mean, when you get into a relationship with someone who becomes your life partner, not that I am the expert on this, but it does seem like there's something about this person that just fits and that can bring out new things in you. What did that relationship bring out in you that you maybe didn't know before?
I was always very talkative, but I'm also a very timid person growing up. But I think he was the one who made me more outspoken, maybe sharing my thoughts without the fear. I was always interested in singing, but I never got the chance to learn music. So after when we moved to Kansas, he got details of a music teacher, and I started learning music. So there are so many things that he made me do, which I thought that I would never do.
What was it like to start those music lessons?
Oh, it was my very first day. I walk into the teacher's house in her basement, and all I see are like 8-year-old, 9-year-old, tiny little cute kids. And then I'm like, I'm going to sit with them. And then they were more much experienced than me. So I was like, oh my God, what am I doing?
That's really brave, actually. I mean, to just like be like, it's okay. I'm still going to learn this new thing. I'm an adult and I'm sitting here with 8-year-olds, and that's fine because I'm going to do this.
Yeah, I just went with that thought. And then after my first class, I still remember. And when I came back home, he asked me, he's like, how did it go? And he teased me. I mean, like in Indian movies, Bollywood, or like the Hindi songs, they are like these full hip hop rap songs. And like, and he was like teasing me, did she teach you something of that? Or what did you learn?
What else do you remember about those early times in the US, about that just adjustment to your new life, not just as an immigrant, but also in this new relationship?
When I think, as you said, I was all learning to live all by myself, away from my family, and then also trying to know this person better. It was an interesting journey. And in the beginning, my very first semester, it was a little tough because you need to accustom to the change in teaching methodologies, change in exam patterns, and you still have to maintain your GPA. You have to get an on-campus job.
What was your job?
My first on-campus job was tutoring. Tutoring in molecular biology and genetics, I think. And I actually came to University of Missouri, St. Louis. So I studied there for a semester, and then I transferred to St. Cloud State University in St. Cloud, Minnesota. So for my first semester in St. Louis, that was my job. And when I got my first paycheck, I still remember I gave a call to my father and I said, Papa, I received my first paycheck of $400 or something. And then I also have a tax deduction on my paycheck.
That was a surprise?
Yeah.
What was it like for him to hear that you were off earning a paycheck, you know, after you've said growing up that he was so protective of you that you couldn't go on a bus?
His only worry was that you went there for to get a master's degree. You eat well, keep your health safe, get good grades.
And so you were in St. Louis and Minnesota before coming here, but you've had a very Midwestern journey in the United States.
Yes. I was actually, I think, all over the United States, I should say. I was in St. Cloud for a while. I worked in Florida for 6 months. Then I lived in California for 6 months. And when we got married, Srinivas was in Cedar Rapids, Iowa at that point of time. So we lived in Iowa for a year before moving to Kansas. But the Midwestern life is what attracted us so much. The other reason for that is that we both studied in university towns, St. Cloud and El Paso. They're both university towns. So you have that family, friendly, casual
environment. There's a community.
Mm-hmm.
But tell me more about what it was, what you mean by the Midwestern life. Like, what? How do you see what that is?
It is more casual. You get more family time. You get to see that a balance between your work and family life. Also, Cedar Rapids, it's not that of a big city. So when Srinivas lived there for 6 years, and in that 6 years, we made some good friends, friends who have now become an extended family for us. And we built so many relationships. And when it came for us to choose where we're going to move from Cedar Rapids, Kansas became our instant choice because Kansas gave that a feeling of both an upgrade to a bigger city, but you still have that a smaller city feeling where you can still have that a family time. Yeah, you're not spending much time on traffic, on roads. And so it was an instant decision for us to move to Kansas.
You know, you've said that family was a big part of what your dream was before your husband was killed. And I want to know more about that, but I also want to know about your professional dreams because you had been in graduate school and you're talking about tutoring molecular biology. What were you hoping to do?
I'm actually now a database developer, which is so different from tutoring in molecular biology.
It is, yeah.
But I think over these years, I actually found my passion, which is into database coding and stuff like that. So I graduated when I moved to St. Cloud, I chose a different program. I did my master's in engineering management, which focuses on Lean and Six Sigma and all of those principles. And then I also studied on database development there. And that's how I started working on to database development and all of this. So it was a shift in field for me.
But it sounds like it fits.
Yes, it fits. And when I went to India in 2012, I had to go without applying for my work visa. So I had to come back as a dependent to him. And that's how my status got tied up with his status. And so when I came back at that point of time, those who are a dependent to the H-1B workers, they did not have the option to work in the United States. So I had a career break of 4 years. And all through these years, he was the same encouraging and inspirational person in my life. And he used to tell me that maybe this is a time for you to explore new things. So that's how the music came, me cooking different types of cuisines. And,
you know, I don't want to dwell too much on that moment of intense loss and confusion and grief that you must have experienced when your husband was taken away so suddenly. But we have talked about that, you know, you had these dreams of a family. Can you tell me more about that? And just because that your direction had to change of your thoughts so quickly.
Srinu always enjoyed being around kids. He was, and all our friends who had kids, he was their favorite uncle. He would play with them and be one among them. And so it was a bit, natural that having our own family, having our own kids was the next step for us. So we were just waiting for us to settle down in our new house and I get a job and we have that stability in our life so that when we make that big transition of having a family, we are ready for that. So, as I said, Srinu and kids, and we had these dreams of having two kids, and he used to tell me that we will have a daughter because he's like, I like girls. And also because on his side, there are three brothers. So he never had a girl in his family. I mean, he had cousins, but not his own sister. So he's like, I want to have a girl. I wish we really have a girl. And it's like the first child should be a girl, the second child should be a boy. Then we are a total family. We are that complete family. And
you guys really had it figured out. I mean, in those, that is a big thing to let go of. And just in the time right after he died, I mean, you spoke out so clearly, and you've talked about being timid and about, I'm curious, you know, what gave you the courage to speak out, to demand answers the way you did? It really takes guts.
I think when I look back, I am surprised at myself too, that I did all of that. And sometimes I also feel it's him. It's him who is still with me and making me do things to bring a change.
You have learned a lot more since then about how your husband handled himself in those last moments. Can you tell us about that?
I think the most recent thing that I knew about what happened that night was when I watched the A&D episode, Divided States, on Olathe, which aired on Monday. That was the first time I'm hearing or watching Mike Jacobs or Scott Glass. And the moment that struck me, the one moment that struck me, when Scott was explaining that when this guy was coming and misbehaving with Srinu and Alok and asking all these weird questions, and Srinu had this puzzled look and with his hands up, and I'm like, wow, I mean, why did I never knew this? Why is it that I'm only hearing about this after a year? And after that, I also met with people who did the CPR on Srinu. I mean, knowing a lot of those kind of bits and pieces of what happened in that night gave me a little peace. I was able to find that peace for myself, he was in good hands. There were some, although there was one bad guy that showed us the worst that night, there were so many good people that showed the best for us.
Sunaina Dimala, I'm really so sorry for your loss. We are going to come back to this conversation and talk more about what you've been up to recently, what you're doing to honor your husband's memory, and maybe your new dreams. I'm Gina Kaufman. This portrait session will be right back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and today's show is a portrait session with Sunaina Dimala. Sunaina, welcome back.
Thanks, Gina.
We just traveled with you through a really difficult chapter in your life and through the loss of your husband. And there was a bystander at the bar where he was shot, and he stepped in. And I do wonder if that provided you any consolation.
Yes. Ian stepping out and standing up for both Srinu and Alok was our answer to that guy who held get out of country before shooting Srinu or Alok. And as I said, Ian is very kind heart. I mean, I've known him, I've met him multiple times. I call him brother. And he is a genuinely good, kind-hearted guy. And there were also many people that night who were equally heroes, who rushed to these people, who attended these people when they were lying down, and they showed us the country that we believe in.
You have done so much work in the last year. I mean, you've started a movement in a way of your own. Can you talk to me about how that idea took shape and what it is that you are working toward?
So whenever I would go back to that incident on that night, the one thing that always troubled me was the misconception or the ideology with which he killed my husband. He thought both my husband, they belonged to a different country, or they were terrorists, or whatever was in his. So all that ignorance that was in his head. So with that thought in my mind, I approached my employer and my CEO, Mr. Farooq Kapan, to, like, what is that we can do? What is that we can do so that we can stop others from going to this pain?
What gave you the idea that your employer would support this and be your partner in this? That's a really amazing bond to have with an employer.
I think it was just a step I took from my heart. I did not even think before asking him. I was actually in India. I wrote this to him in an email. And to my surprise, he jumped right in. And soon we had volunteers that came in from all different branches of the company. We formed a team and we started working on different ideas that what is that we can do and how we can spread this message, or what ways that we can do that. And when we sat down and we spent like a few months and looking at different ideas and what would work, what wouldn't work, and keeping our company's background into digital marketing, we thought a social media campaign would be our best way to go forward. And that's how we came up with the idea of Forever Welcome Facebook campaign.
And explain what that is.
So as I said, the mission of Forever Welcome Facebook campaign is to spread this message that America is still welcome and it's still a safe and secure place for current and future immigrant generations. And as I said before, there is no you, there is no me, it's we. And so that's why in Forever Welcome, the emphasis is on we in the welcome.
Have you met people who have surprised you or touched you in the last year through that campaign? I mean, can you think of someone? Because social media, I mean, that is originally what connected you to your husband. It does connect yeah. people. And I wonder if the connection has been personal in some cases.
With the Forever Welcome, we just went live in on January 16th. So we are still building up. But even before that, I feel myself very fortunate, although I wish we met under a very different circumstances, but I'm blessed to call her my friend, Mindy Corporan. She lost her father and son 4 years ago at the Jewish Community Center shooting. And when I first met her, it was very brief. But then we had some common friends who could make us a meeting possible, a lunch meeting possible between us. And the very first meeting, she said she was able to hear my pain and she was able to console me. She was able to listen through me. And when we were walking out, she said, "Sunaina, whatever you do, you'll find me by your side." And she has been on my side since then. She was there at the walk. She was cheering me up.
Can you tell us about the walk? You recently did organize a peace march in your husband's honor because it was his birthday.
Yes. When I had the thought of doing something around the anniversary, I chose March 9th, which is his birthday, rather than the day he was taken away from us. I wanted to celebrate his birthday and as a celebration of life, because Srinu was always a positive outlook person. And so it made me much happier that we are smiling, we are celebrating his life and honoring him and keeping his legacy. So that's how we chose March 9th to do the peace walk. We walked from Garmin to Austin's. We had a picture of him in front of Austin's, and we had flowers for everybody to lay over and to greet him, his birthday wishes. And then we walked back to Garmin. We had an overwhelming crowd that turned out in large numbers. So I was very happy to see the community coming forward and supporting us that way.
I asked you earlier about what meeting your husband brought out in you that maybe you hadn't known before, and you talked about courage and you talked about some other things like that. And now, you know, I know that you feel he's still with you, but in so many ways you're on your own now. And I wonder what that has brought out in you.
I never knew that I was this strong. I am trying to look at life at a different perspective now. We hear things, we know life is uncertain and do what you can you do, but when you're actually in that shoes, that's when it hits you the hard that life is indeed short. And do as much as good as possible. And I think I'm moving forward with that ideology right now. I want to spread as much love as possible in whatever little amount of time that I have.
You also talked about independence, a desire for independence bringing you to this country. And the level of independence that you are now experiencing, I'm sure, feels like as much like a curse as a blessing at times. But you're on your own visa now, and you're pursuing so many things on your own. Do you feel like this is another level of independence in some ways, or is that just a really weird way to look at it?
I should say a very weird way to look at it, I should say.
Yeah.
I had my independence of having my own house or setting up the kitchen I wanted, doing whatever I wanted to do, even before last year. But I think I'm still trying to be single. I'm still learning to be single. Over the last 1 year, whatever struggle I had to go with my immigration and all of that, I also had my parents be with me for about 10 months. So I think my brain never got the chance to actually grieve or think. Maybe now it's the time for me to actually look on the direction and go on that path of what it is for me. So I should see. But I think I'm trying to take it by a day.
Yeah, one day at a time.
One day at a time.
Yeah. It's an incredible journey you've been on and that you're still on. And again, I'm so sorry for your loss. It's really like you wish you met Mindy under other circumstances. I wish I met you under other circumstances. But I'm still really glad I got to know you today.
I am really glad to meeting you today. I hope the listeners got to know me in a different way. I'll try my best. I'll be in touch. I'll be doing more outreach programs. I'll be trying to spread as much as love as possible.
Thank you so much. This has been a portrait session with Sunaina Dumala. And photographs by Paul Andrews of Sunaina will be online with this interview at kcur.org/centralstandard. And we will also be sharing all of that on social media if you follow us that way. That is a wrap for the week. Our show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Coy Duggar, and Suzanne Hogan, with help from intern Matt Groby. Linda Scher runs the board for us every day, and our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs. If you're looking for weekend listening, I also host a podcast called Midwesternish. You can find out more about it on our website, kcur.org. I'm Gina Kaufman. Have a great weekend, everyone.